Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Mean, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
Brian Brushwood.
Ahoy.
And Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody.
So, After Things, we talk about a lot of stuff. We give career advice, which, is kind of fun.
Marginal.
Yeah, that's funny by itself. We talk about pop culture, entertainment. And I think we could do a pop culture thing. Anything big happened in the last couple of days? Any announcements in the pop culture world?
Live on the scene, it's Gumshoe reporter Brian Brushwood, just returning back from Comic-Con. Name one where, other Brian? Person Wait, who's where, a co-host what? Of this podcast that was there at Comic-Con.
The comic what?
Comic-Con, Andrew. It's a fun little festival they got down there in San Diego town, and they get all these nerds together, and they mostly look at each other and buy figurines. It's a Funko Pop enthusiast festival that they also do commercials for upcoming movies.
Two on the nose.
It is amazing how Comic-Con has, it used to be like, it was like Show West or whatever was like the big deal where they would announce upcoming movies because that's where all the theater owners would go. And that was sort of like the big place where you'd get that. And Comic-Con has become like the Comdex of entertainment, if there was still a Comdex. It is an amazing how much comes out of there now and how that is. So highlights, anybody? Anything cool?
There was an amazing Game of Space Team that was played at the Dubliner, just north of convention center. More.
I think, look, the big news was Marvel returns to San Diego Comic-Con. They lay out Phase 4, and it's fairly remarkable in that they really made it half about showing the kind of talent they were going to bring to Disney Plus, which I would have almost suspected would be more of like a D23 thing, but they did it at Comic-Con and it was star-studded. In a lot of ways, it kind of felt like a big victory lap for them in saying like, look, we already just made the announcement began with them saying that they had officially passed Avatar as the most money-making movie of all time.
And then they proceed barely with a little bit of goosing, but that's not to take anything away from that.
That whole thing felt like, oh yeah, we just found $7 million somewhere.
Yeah.
I read a couple things about apparently like that is a thing that happens when the movies are like officially coming out of theaters, then they do their final accounting on it. But who knows? It's Hollywood accounting.
But also I think the important thing is I don't want to take anything away from the Avengers franchise or anything, but it is telling that this year has just been soft for blockbusters all around. Like, if you can't beat Avatar, a movie that generally rode the public interest in 3D technology to see, if you can't beat Avatar with the culmination of a 10-year saga. I don't know. It was softer. Like, it should have been Avatar much, much faster.
I don't know. I mean, because like Avatar had such a perfect storm of events that happened. More people went to the box office back then.
Correct.
Yeah. Fewer people go see movies now. And that's the hard part, is that ticket prices have gone up, and partially is to account for that. But if you look at raw numbers of ticket sales, that's the problem the industry is facing, is that we're just not going to the movies like we used to. And the fact that you could beat Avatar, I was more impressed by that. And that's why it had to be worldwide, because domestically, they tried to goose it with the re-release of it, and it was such a botched. Yeah, I think they could have done it domestically if they did it right.
Keep in mind, my comments are an indictment on the state of the box office, not an indictment on Avengers full-on earned the right to be the number one movie of all time. I am mad that it didn't happen faster, if anything.
Yeah, no, I get you. Yeah, and I think you know, look at, go pull up Box Office Mojo and look at like the list of top movies, you know, for the year, you know, the top movies so far. And if I'm not mistaken, it's like they're all either Disney owned or Marvel produced, you know, because like Spider-Man is not owned by Disney. It's Sony, but it's
Avengers,
produced.
Avengers, yeah, like Captain Marvel, five, Toy five. Story, Aladdin, Spider-Man, The Lion King. Oh, my God. I just want to vomit.
Us at 7, John Wick wow. at 8, How to Train Your Dragon at 9, Life of Pets at 10. But still, top 6 out of the top 10.
Yeah, and again, Spider-Man is technically a Sony movie, but it was made by.
Sure,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, it is a Marvel movie. So, laid out Phase 4. I do think it's funny because now that having this conversation, it does kind of make sense that they're like, oh, and look at all the cool things that will not be dependent on box office grosses that are going to be on this over-the-top streaming service. But let's take a look at what they laid out. The first movie coming out is the long-awaited Black Widow movie. That'll be May 1st, 2020. Are we excited about Black Widow?
Yes, she was one of the very best parts of Endgame. She was amazing, and I look forward to it. Apparently, I'm the only one.
That's fine.
Let's just let that awkward silence hang.
When we get closer to it, I will be. I think I love Scarlett Johansson as an actress. I think that my issue has been the backstory we got in Ultron and some of that and stuff just made me less interested in it. But I think that I will be super psyched and stoked for it by the time we get closer to it, because Marvel always surprises and delights me. As a concept right now, no, because it's like, I think Ultron and what they did there, and I think that some of the stuff just made me, and I had issues. I mean, like, Endgame's amazing, but I felt like, man, like, she's so much more interesting than what they're doing, and
I think I'm riding on the wave of her being far and away, and again, this is reductionist and rude of me, but in the category of female superheroes, far and away the most interesting person in Infinity War and Endgame put together. Far and away, and every moment they try to wedge somebody who wasn't Black Widow, I got mad. I'm like, why are you not showing Black Widow? So the idea of getting a little bit of room to really see her sing, I'm excited about.
I'm looking forward to the first female-led Marvel movie.
It sounds like you refuse to acknowledge a certain other movie, but that's fine.
I can't remember. Hey, if anybody can name another one, let me know, but I can't remember another one.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, and Brian, I'd say the point is, your point kind of rings up like, yeah, you know, let's get more female characters out there. So it's, you know, it's not easy just to pick and go, well, this one's great. Because it's like, yeah, the three, you know, but... I know I'm going to be surprised and delighted. Like, I went to like Doctor Strange. I'm like, oh, I love Doctor Strange. And like, I don't like this take from this trailer. And now I'm like, it's one of my favorite Marvel movies. You know, I'm that guy. I'm very easily flipped. I'm very easily swayed. So I'm like, my hands on my hips going, I don't know, Marvel. And then I'm going to be like, you know, you're going to see me here probably in these microphones going, go see Captain, you know, Black Widow.
Reminder that she was essentially the other half of the Winter Soldier, one of the best Marvel movies, full stop.
That was apparently the footage that was shown. It was described as Winter Soldier / like John Wick kind of esque they want to tell
I just think I put my finger on what it is that sort of got me is that, like, we've had a lot of okay kind of, like, there's been Atomic Blonde, there's been, like, Red Spirit, there's been a lot of stuff that I haven't seen any of this footage. There's been a lot of stuff that we've already had that sounds like it, and that when you do the female spy thing, it almost always follows the same exact template of she comes from the spy agency that now betrayed her, and she's got to find out who's behind it. And that sort of is like my bias going into it. It's like, I've seen the same female spy story now done every effing time. I can think of like probably a dozen female spy movies that all feel like that. I have faith that Marvel's going to give me something fresh and different. That's my confidence because... And she's even done that movie, you know? So that's everything I've heard about it sounds like that movie. And it's like, man, you know, I'm no about me, but I write a lot of female characters. And I try to make them complex and find different sort of storylines. And I get kind of bored when I'm like, oh, you're using plot A. Okay. But it's Marvel. That's surprising.
It's like, oh, let me guess. It's a female spy movie. Is she going to wear a sexy dress and then like kiss a lady or a gross dude? And then
she has
she's
to pretend
gonna...
to be somebody and get in the seductive.
And use her thighs to, you know, bring a guy down, which, you know, in judo, that's what we taught. All we taught, yeah. You know, the women in the class is like, this is how you take a guy down, is just throw your thighs around his head and do this.
Is there going to be a moment where she's going to look to the camera and take off her wig. And, you know, walk forward? I'll bet you that's in the movie.
Have you seen the Charlie's Angels trailer, by the way?
No.
Is there another Charlie's Angels
trailer? Yeah, they're bringing it
back. Oh, no, wait a minute. No, I did see it. Yeah. Okay. And that the fact that I couldn't remember is probably my commentary. All right. So, Bryce, the next...
Next one on the list is The Falcon and the Winter Soldier coming to Disney Plus.
This one is actually, it'll be interesting to hear if I'm on the other side of this. This one I'm less knee-jerk excited about. I like The Falcon. I like The Winter Soldier. Don't love either of them. We'll see if they can combine together to form an interesting character.
I'm going to tell you here, this is the Thor for Marvel. Meaning that... Thor was the big test of, hey, can we bring in like gods and other dimensions and all this magical into a world where you had Iron Man is he's Elon Musk who builds a suit, you know, Captain America. Yeah, it's a little bit of biotech-y kind of thing, but it's, you know, yeah, this guy takes off his face. And he's a Red Skull, but it didn't stretch. We didn't have to think like go way beyond. And that was the big bold leap for Thor was, no, we're literally going to have a rainbow bridge. We're literally going to have that. And that movie, you know, it's not ranked among many people's favorite Marvel movies, but the weight it had to carry in the universe that it built is sort of the shoulders upon which Marvel sort of now stands, right? This, you getting Marvel, the theatrical unit now, the people really responsible for the MCU getting into TV. We've seen the other TV projects done were basically ABC projects with Marvel partially, but really wasn't the same core. Some of the same, like, well, Joss Whedon this, but yeah, but it wasn't an MCU project. It was a different writing team, different people planning this. This is coming from top. So this is a very different approach. So Marvel trying to do a live action television series. And again, people are like, well, there was S.H.I.E.L.D. Like that was different division, different people, yeah. And the results speak for themselves, depending upon your point of view on that. The Netflix stuff was good, but that was still... all right, go off, do this. This is going to be interesting because these are main MCU characters. These are people that are going to go back into the movies. These are storylines that are going to affect that. And the quality has to be there. Look what happened with, you know, over time, like with, you know, the Netflix stuff, like by the time you got to Iron Fist, you know.
Iron Fist killed my interest in all of it. Like, and I loved... I love Daredevil. I thought Jessica Jones was great. I really dug the first six episodes of Luke Cage. And when one character died, apparently to be reborn as Blade, I lost a lot of interest in that series. But as soon as Iron Fist happened, I was like, oh, but I could not care less. This guy sucks. This story sucks. And it never really came back for me.
And that was, you know, and then there was, you know, with things because like Marvel TV gave us the Immortals.
Yeah, which, you know.
Well, and also.
In comical fart sound.
Also, you know, this was earlier this year, but Hulu kind of picked up the Marvel TV deal for these animated series. And now this is Marvel making the live action stuff move over to Disney Plus. And so Hulu is kind of this. I think Hulu is going to be where the offbeat weird stuff is because that'll be like Howard the Duck, right?
Right. Yeah. So I'm curious because, and I guess to come back to this is what Falcon and Winter Soldier is, or whatever the title is, Captain America, or what's it called?
Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Yeah.
If it's Captain America, I'm confused. What this is going to give us is we're going to see the largest entertainment company on the planet telling us this is the future of entertainment. Box office will be there, but also that we want to give you a reason to give us every month, give us this Marvel subscription money, that and then Star Wars with Mandalorian. It's high stakes. It's very, very, very high stakes on this, because you see how big like Stranger Things become, or how big Game of Thrones became. Disney is now, outside of their children's content, I don't think they've ever had a series kind of thing that's become that.
Yeah.
You know? And so I guess that's the behind the scenes weight on this.
And also I will say, you know, they tease Baron Zemo as what we assume is going to be the season one villain. I thought he was awesome. Daniel Brühl played a great Zemo in Civil War. I thought that Civil War for me was the first time that Marvel kind of the MCU took a very marked difference of like, we're going to really put the weight into our villains. We're going to make our villains complex and not just a thing that our heroes will punch at the end. And so I'm excited. I think that you can tell a very interesting Baron Zemo story based on the character that was introduced in Civil War over, you know, 6 or 8 episodes, wherever they're going to do.
Man, now you just reminded me of how bad the actual villain of Civil War was. Like, Baron Zemo,
bad they don't explain him at all.
So bad that none of us can remember his name. We just remember he's the dude that tried to kill himself and got stopped from killing himself at the end.
Hey, no, I just said he was good. I just explained.
No. Baron Zemo was not the villain in Civil War. You got to the end. It was that dude in his late 30s who tried to kill himself. He was the one behind everything. Baron Zemo was long dead and gone.
That's Baron Zemo.
What?
You're thinking of Dr. Zoloff.
Sorry, yeah, that's who I'm thinking of. Dr. Zoloff.
I was thinking of Ultron, so.
Oh, yeah. Ultron.
No, Baron Zemo. Okay. Yeah.
Shoot, I got to go back and watch that movie, I guess. I don't know.
Great movie.
Dr.
Zoloff? Wow. Sorry, what?
Wow.
The next item on the Phase 4 coming November 6, 2020 is The Eternals with Kumail Nanjiani, Lauren Ridloff, Brian Tyree Henry, Selma Hayek, Laia McHugh, Don Lee, Angelina Jolie, directed by Chloe Zhao.
I don't know how you make this.
What is The Eternals?
I mean, it's just everything writ large, right? It's like, keep making, like, this is where I think I worry. And this is all fan talk. This is not anybody judging the artistic ability of anybody else. But you begin with Iron Man, a very grounded, very concrete story that gets a little bit high tech and more high tech and more high tech. Then you expand. Guardians of the Galaxy, Thor was the first time that I thought that was the threshold, and you can't cross it because it'll get too silly and too big. And then again, Guardians of the Galaxy, I thought would be the threshold because the characters are too minor and the stakes too cosmic. And now, to be honest, if you told me on paper, I would have said the same thing about Endgame and Infinity War. And this is the next threshold where I am tempted to say, okay, we get it. We're getting even bigger. And I will say flatly that they failed to cross that threshold with Captain Marvel. Too much power, totally lost interest. Everything's cosmic light show and infinite whatevers. Eternals, I fear the same thing. I fear that we're dealing with too big of a story for me to really perceive them as human beings that I care about.
My issue with Captain Marvel is I agree the power thing. It's the Superman problem when you make him too powerful. And it's like they had this with Quicksilver. You saw this both with the Fox's version of Quicksilver and Marvel's version of him, where it's like, oh, man, this guy goes really effing fast and can solve these problems very quickly. We either have to write him out of the story quickly or kill him off. You know, that was a problem with Captain Marvel, was that, is it like, you know, like, oh, no, she's unavailable. Can't get here, because it's like, yeah, that's one problem. The other is, we could talk about story. I do have faith in Marvel in that, like, they chose this for a reason, because they go, what stories do we want to do? And you know, Justin and I have argued now over, hey, which is the better Spider-Man movie now, Far From Home or Homecoming? You know, when we're arguing over, of these two Spider-Man, which is the better and which is one of the best Marvel movies ever? You know, their ability to go from Thor Ragnarok to getting me excited about kids on a field trip in Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like I said, it's like I'm like, ah, oh, Black Widow, been there, seen it, and then I'm gonna be like, oh my god, it's amazing, you know, and like
and to be clear, I'm not in the business of betting against Disney. I mean they're fantastic stewards of the franchise.
There's some Disney we can bet against, but
my point is yet again I find myself at a very familiar crossroads where everything about the nature of this project screams maybe too much, maybe too big of scope for me to get invested in.
At least in a descriptive way, are they all superheroes? Are they gods? Or
they're cosmic superheroes, right? So think okay. in the realm of Captain Marvel. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. That's yeah. Okay.
There's two movies on this slate, and I'm sure we'll get to the next one right after this that I have the same feelings of, which are like, you guys have built up a lot of goodwill, so I'll definitely go see it, but man, do I not immediately have any interest in either the Eternals. I think that's a fun cast. Well, with the Eternals, I do like everybody that is in that that movie, but this and the Ten Rings film, I'm like, man, do I not immediately have any interest in either of these properties.
So here's a take, though, is that like Marvel and really with Kevin Feige, they do things from a very smart point of view. They come there and they say either we need to do this because often it's financially, you know, a Shang-Chi movie is like, hey, what's our second biggest market? China. What's one of our issues? Diversity. Great fit. Great, great, great fit. Let's go do this and let's make the best movie we can because it solves two issues, both where we want to be artistically and trying to be more representative, and then where we want to be financially with trying to address a global world market. But, you know, Marvel, it's not like Marvel sitting there with, you know, is it like 80 years now from Timely Comics on forward of history of going, man, I just don't have any more ideas. No, they have too many. So they get to choose, carefully pick and choose. And so even things I haven't like been big fans of, I get why they've done. And they've certainly, another audience has found them and loved it. You know, that's been my thing. A couple of my least favorite Marvel movies, you know, have been ones that other people have loved. And I go like, well, they know what they're doing. And here it's like I'm kind of like, it's not like they just sort of, you know, Kevin Feige just reached into a stack of comic books and just pulled up, Eternals, what's this? Here, make it happen. And threw them, you know, threw the comic at them, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming.
Well, that would be cool, though.
Yeah. I'm assuming that based on the MCU and their track record that they have a good story here and they want to tell it. This will apparently show us the real Mandarin, not the version that we saw in Iron Man 3, which I loved.
I'm glad you said that because to be honest, I was like, man, I kind of like the how they handled the Mandarin thing. Kind of not thrilled to see them undo or have the real one or whatever.
I would say, look, I think that you can do cool things with what the Mandarin is supposed to be in the comics. I think it fits a lot better in a movie where all the characters are Asian and not when it's being played by Ben Kingsley in an Iron Man movie. But at the same time, Mandarin is a problematic character in general, so I was happy to see them zag instead of try to shoehorn it into the MCU. But yeah, look, this is one of those where congratulations. I'll buy this too. I'll buy into this. Cool. Let's go.
So that was Shang-Chi. That's in February. In spring of 2021 is WandaVision. With Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany back as Scarlet Witch and Vision. Also an adult Monica Rambeau, who was in Captain Marvel. This is Disney Plus.
Yeah. I think in the comics, you know, that the play between those two has been great. They've had a lot of fun with that. And I think that you could really get into sort of fun personal stories and stuff. And, you know, the thing that I think that does concern me about the Marvel movies, the upcoming slate, and other than the next one we're getting to, I've never seen anything by any of the directors that are directing them, right? I've never seen anything by any of these directors, so I have no compass. I have no way to go like, oh, they did a really cool job here, and I'm excited about the director, because I'm ignorant. I just don't see enough movies and stuff, and I think that was part of the thing that kind of got to me, though, was the, like, I trust the Marvel machine, you know, but, like, the my favorite Marvel movies have been from directors that have done really cool stuff before, or I go, oh, they're good at this, they're good at that. And I guess that's what scares me. That's what scares me about most about Phase 4 is they're expanding the directors, which is, I think, is a great thing, but none of them have done anything that I go, oh, this is cool, and I'm excited to see where they go.
Well, especially in a post-Netflix MCU universe where we've seen missteps. We've seen what it looks like when somebody doesn't do a good story, and we watched the Defenders franchise collapse in on itself.
Well, I would see, I think, and just for the movies point of view, like from the TV series stuff, like that ends up being so much more committee at this level.
Yeah. Well, and but, I believe, Bryce, you said WandaVision was a TV show.
Yeah, or? This will be a Disney Plus.
Yeah, yeah, I know. It's going back to the movies. I'm sorry. I was my delayed thought, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, WandaVision, like I said, that could be a fun show. I mean, that could be a very fun, you know, that relationship between those two, I thought was. You know, my girlfriend had never seen, she saw like the first Marvel movie. One of the first ones she saw, I think, was Infinity War. And she, yeah, one of the first was that. And the relationship to her first introduction to Wanda and Vision was there, but thought it was very strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is there. And that will feed directly into, because although they do have some first time directors at the beginning of Phase 4, they anchoring it with some returning directors. And the first of which is Scott Derrickson with Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, which Scarlet Witch will feed directly into from the WandaVision series. But this apparently will be, I think they went out of their way to not say the H word. I didn't hear them say horror. They said it's going to be the first scary MCU movie. But I'm in on that. Like, yeah, give me a real, like, Doctor Strange has some real macabre, you know, kind of stuff in it. And I think that especially in the hands of Scott Derrickson and C. Robert Cargill, you can tell a great, great Doctor Strange movie. This might be the one I'm most excited
for. It's not much of a stretch at all. They were already dipping their toes in Lovecraftian water, so I would imagine that we'll get, you know, a number of things that feel like H.P. Lovecraft out of this.
I'm stoked. You know, I think that the lesson of Thor Ragnarok was take a thing you love, put them into an environment that's very, very different for them and different from what we've seen them before. And, you know, we're watching them push more towards, like, you know, when they first started to try to imagine that, you know, that we were going to get to where Marvel ended up, you know, imagine trying to describe, you know, Endgame to somebody 20 years ago.
Sure.
Or 15 years ago, describing like, oh yeah, I'm going to tell you the biggest box office movie of all time, what's going to be. Well, half the Avengers are going to be, you know, vanished because Thanos did the snap. And so they're going to have to go do this. And like, yeah, in your dreams. Yeah, that'll happen. That'll be the biggest movie ever. Right. Some Avengers movie based upon, the Infinity Gauntlet. You know, that's going to happen. Well, guess what? That's the world we live in now.
I mean, I'm sure that if somebody can go back and find some AICN talkback comment, you know, from 1997, where it's like, no, it would be the biggest thing ever, and just lays out all of it, only to be summarily trashed by everybody.
No, I was like, well, nobody knows who the Avengers are. You'd have to establish them first with a series of movies, but I doubt that'll happen. But, you know, you'd really need, like, Disney to buy Marvel and for them to, really, you know.
In your dreams, Kay Faggy.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think this is awesome. This is the one of all the movies that in Phase 4, I think this is the one where I would bet the most money it will knock it out of the park.
So Doctor Strange is May 2021. Also in spring of 2021 is a new Disney Plus series, Loki, starring Tom Hiddleston as Loki.
This seems like it could be extraordinarily fun. Like, anytime you have a villain that you are given a framework that you're allowed to kind of root for, especially, I mean, he's the god of mischief, right? And so it's sort of anything goes. It feels to me like this is a rich Tapestry. And of course, Tom Hiddleston is a tremendous talent. And I'm very excited about it. In fact, possibly out of everything, I'm most excited about this.
This seems the most episodic. Like, you can just say, all right, so Loki's in World War II, Loki's in the French Revolution.
Exactly. Like it's sliders in the MCU, right? Yeah. MCU sliders. That'd be great.
Cool. Let's, you know, everything is kind of, we can just tell a fun story with this character where the weight of everything
is on it.
The same way that Falcon and Winter Soldier it is, and WandaVision it is, because these are going to tie right back into these other movies. Loki's like, whatever, he's in kind of a pocket universe and he's going to destroy. Like, we don't know whether or not he's going to pervert this entire thing.
Well, and that's the nice thing is that he doesn't have an overt mandate to do the right thing. You know, it's like, set us up with a situation and how would a sociopath with infinite power deal with it? Let's find out.
Yeah. And he's still in another universe, right? So it's going to be.
Yeah.
Fun to see what happens there, because then it's, you don't have to play by the same rules. Yeah,
officially our Loki is still dead, but our neighbor universe, he ran off with the Tesseract.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because now that Marvel's got a gazillion movies in, and like I said, you know, the last Marvel movie, like if you go look at the Rotten Tomatoes for Far From Home, and it's actually, I think, currently like the highest from an audience score, like the highest rated one yet. And so they're able to still knock the, and to the point it frustrates critics, because like, yeah, Marvel did it again. Great. Marvel, the Marvel formula works again. And well, it's an ever evolving formula. That's the beauty of it, is that, you know, it goes from, can do very different things. But it's interesting. Let's do spoilers on Far From Home.
Sure.
Sure.
So, you know, at the very, very end, you have the last scene is Nick Fury in space with a bunch of Skrull building spaceships and stuff, which seems to be like, that was our sort of Thanos sort of moment of what's next, you know, what's going to be the end of phase four going to be, or phase five, you know, what's that going to be? And are we going to get to big galactic war kind of thing?
Which, yeah, seems like it is. Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm all in. I loved Far From Home. I loved that moment. I loved the twist with the Skrulls, because it set up the Skrulls as what I like them to be, as opposed to another movie that I can't remember the name of.
And you know what was, you heard that what they almost did with Mysterio?
No.
Mysterio earlier on was the talk of him making him a Skrull.
Oh, interesting.
Which shows us the idea of Skrull. And they made an allusion in Far From Home about like a Skrull faction, or this, the idea that we're going to get a Skrull war.
Yeah.
And that what we want.
That's all I need. We did a lot of image rehab with Far From Home. Just give me a bad Skrull, and then we're back to where I need them.
Yep. Our first time ever being introduced to the Skrulls.
Yep. First time. Never seen them before.
Yep. Cool. So, man, it's going to be an interesting, you know, this next year, you know, between Mandalorian and then, which comes first, Mandalorian or Falcon Winter Soldier?
Falcon Winter Soldier is fall 2020.
Oh, okay. So Mandalorian this year.
Mandalorian, yeah, because Disney Plus is later 2019.
For the record,
that's going to be a launch title, is Mandalorian?
I think it'll be.
That's the artwork.
I think it'll be early Disney Plus.
Dude, for the record, more excited about the Mandalorian than maybe all of the Marvel stuff combined. The Mandalorian specifically, we're looking at essentially the first wide open playing field for a non-Lucas set of artists to play in the Star Wars universe. By being totally divorced from the Skywalker series, or from Rebels, or from the Clone Wars, I have very high hopes for the fact that this sounds like a very simple narrative. We're looking at space westerns being their space western-iniest, and I'm super stoked.
Yeah, I'm. Yeah, you know, I think Favreau was a really good choice. You know, I think Favreau, when he's really, really good, is really, really good. Favreau, you know, is done great by Marvel, either through direction and you know, just being a presence there, and to see him working in Star Wars. And David Filoni is really involved, who I thought there was some really good, you know, Clone Wars stuff. I hope. I mean, I was excited about when Rebels was going to come out.
I liked Rebels.
Yeah.
Liked.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And Star Wars for me as a larger property, it's like, you know, one day someone's going to flip that switch and someone's going to do something amazing beyond everything. And it's like, I've liked the movies, but the larger promise of like, oh, no, wait, like, you know, Star Wars is like Game of Thrones, where it's like there's a million different stories you can tell. There's a million different people that don't have anything to do with this one thing. Whether or not people will be able to do it, we'll see.
I am hoping that The Mandalorian is the Incredible Hulk. There's a dude. He's on the run. He's on the outskirts of society. We don't know why. Every week he finds himself in a different situation to help or not help someone, and to I don't know, something about the throwback to the, you know, the branded or whatever. I love the possibility, and hopefully it'll be great.
All right, there was one more movie that was announced. Well, actually, two more, but Taika Waititi returns for Thor, Love and Thunder. Very, very 80s title here, very much in the vein of Ragnarok, and we find out that Natalie Portman will be back, and we will see Jane Foster become Lady Thor.
Yes.
I'm in.
Yep.
And on all of it, it's like the wacky, like, this is something where it's like, if you would have said in anyone else's hands, like, oh, we're doing Natalie Portman as Lady Thor, I'd be like, okay. But with Taika Waititi, I'm like, yep. Go ahead. Take this silly old boat wherever you want to take it.
I would say that in most cases, when a Marvel director is returned, that it's even better work. You know, when they're second and third, like the Russo brothers for sure. John Watts, I thought, you know, great work there. I think yep.
Avengers.
Well, we haven't seen Taika's second movie yet. I mean, the Russo brothers with their Avengers movies. Yes, yes. I'm not an Ultron fan. I don't think it improved upon Avengers, the first one. But for the most part, so yeah, I'm excited. I wasn't as in love with Game of Thrones, the Guardians of the Galaxy 2, to be honest with you.
Sure.
You know?
But, yeah, I mean, I don't think that it is a better movie than the first one, at the very least. I don't think that's controversial.
Yeah, maybe not a controversial take. So, you know, but yeah. So, cool. What? Anything else?
There are a few more things in the Phase 4.
We have the What If animated thing, which I think that's just for anybody who's a nerd. That's rad. That's What If is always one of the coolest Marvel comic conventions. Glad to see that there.
It'll be an animated series, and from this I don't know, this blurb, they're saying that I guess all of these Marvel Disney Plus series will be considered part of the MCU.
Yeah. So yeah, it's going to be animated, and it's going to have a lot of the original voice talent at the very least for these stories.
Did you see who's voicing the Watcher there?
Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah, Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's great.
Awesome. Yeah, whatever. Hawkeye's got a thing. I don't care. Moving on. Got a fat cake.
That font looks like a rom-com.
It looks like his talk show.
I don't know what is happening. You want to know? I mean, I'm more in for a documentary series about Jeremy Renner flipping houses and making Imagine Dragons music than I am anything to do with Hawkeye.
Fair enough.
So, whatever. The big tease was Blade, Mara Hersha Ali is going to resurrect the Blade franchise, all in on that. And then they did tease that, well, we don't have enough time to talk about the Fantastic Four or mutants. Didn't say X-Men, that we didn't have time to talk about the mutants during this panel. So you can I mean, would get if you were to put money on whether or not we are going to see outward hints, if not, you know, a post cameo moment with Fantastic Four or X-Men. What would you say in Phase Four? Are we going to see teases to one or both of those?
I mean, we've got to. I'm bummed because Jason Murphy and I were speculating wildly about how great would it be if instead of doing a Fantastic Four movie, what if they just did a Doom movie and make us believe in Doom as a credible, you know, heir to a small Eastern European country and so on.
Doom had a lot of good points.
Oh, yes, exactly. I don't know. Plus, also, it's like now that we had Captain Marvel set in the 90s, I would love to see a 1960s based period piece, just like we did with Captain America with the Fantastic Four. But I don't know. We'll find out.
I mean, for Doom, there is, you know, if you need somebody else to be your next Thanos.
Yep. Yep.
But yeah, that's the thing. It's like Thanos didn't need a movie. Thanos's movie were the big Infinity War and Endgame.
One of the fun things you could play with Doom is in an era where, as a society, we're dealing with the concept of fake news and propaganda and stuff. You know, he has a country in a bottle. And of course, one of the plot lines in the comic books was that, you know, he full on died, but had a plan in place for all of his robot doppelgangers to keep the idea that he was alive going, and then select a 12-year-old kid to brainwash into fully believing he's Doom. And then as a result, the man could die, but the office does not. That would be a really fun thing for them to play with over two or three movies. But I don't know if we'll see it.
I'm sure we'll see something, but yeah, I know. I think that's a great, I mean, get into a more complex villain. Doom.
Dr. The Kwisatz Haderach.
Yeah. He would be wonderful. I think Fantastic Four in the post Guardians Thor Ragnarok age, I could see a wonderful, wonderful Fantastic Four movie. And I think it could be just a neat opportunity to go in a slightly different direction we've seen before. So I'm excited. Yeah, and the use of mutants, because that was the term they couldn't use before because Fox owned the rights to call them the mutants and stuff. And now that we're getting that. Speaking of which, do you think New Mutants will ever make it to theaters?
I mean, look, when the money factory runs out of...
No, the one that shot.
I actually don't know anything about this.
Yeah, so they shot a New Mutants movie that was like a horror sort of kind of scary sort of with Sophie... who was in it? It was supposed to get released last year, and it got pushed, and...
So this says now it's at April 3rd, 2020.
Yeah, apparently I had to do reshoots and other stuff, and I wonder what happens with that, because...
In the chat, Gambling Man is saying Stephen Colbert is Mr. Fantastic. Wouldn't that be something? First of all, of course, I think he's referencing the fact that Stephen Colbert played a knockoff of Mr. Fantastic on The Venture Brothers, if you guys have seen that. But separately, Jason Murphy was pointing out that if you look at Fantastic Four comic books nowadays, they've evolved the face of Reed Richards. And he says if you look at it now, it is very clear that they're drawing John Krasinski, and that it sounds to me like a decision long in advance to tee up John Krasinski as Mr. Fantastic.
Oh, I don't think. Yeah, I mean, I don't. That may be where the artists were going, but I don't think that's an MC. I mean, remember Krasinski's. By the time they get to this, how old is John Krasinski going to be? And you're going to
probably an appropriate age for Mr. Fantastic, late 30s, early 40s.
Oh, he's in his 40s, you know, but I think that, remember Krasinski was up for Captain America.
Oh, I didn't hear about that.
Oh yeah. He was one of the choices for that.
Place that long-term money there. Yeah, make yourself rich.
Yeah. I love Krasinski.
Man, it looks like they're casting Jason Murphy.
Maybe that's how Jason Murphy sees himself. Yeah, as looking like John Krasinski.
Looks in the mirror and gives himself the Jim from The Office shrug.
Yeah, who knows what they'll do. I always like the idea of starting off when they're younger, you know, and watching us grow with them as they, you know, deal with those issues. But the idea, but would you say, Brian, like starting like midlife crisis sort of Fantastic Four could be, you know, like they were something kind of minor thing in the 60s and they went off exploring space and got lost and come back.
Well, and that's what I'm hoping is for some kind of fish. Yeah. And again, it's a familiar trope, but it's like, I'd love to watch that optimistic Cold War era mid 60s. And then whatever, they get caught in a time vortex that, and suddenly, you know, they're in modern day, or maybe they were even like super hot crap back in the 60s. You know, we see them with on the Merv Griffin show or whatever. And then they go on an adventure that lands them in modern day.
Here's all I'll say is that there's quite a lot of talk, not only in Far From Home and Endgame, but also the title of the Doctor Strange movie.
Look at that though. Look at those pictures side by side.
Actually, that does look a lot like Jeff.
Come on, man.
It does. A lot of talk about multiverses. If they are going to bring in Fantastic Four and Doctor Doom, Secret Wars involves.
Don't you do this? Don't you do this? Don't you talk with this heart? There's a second grade Bryden who's going to be real upset if he's being toyed with.
I would think it would probably be the more recent version of it that they did, but
yeah, because the original I loved, and I remember reading the comic, and he sits down at the machine like straight out of like, you know, Forbidden Planet, and he gets the black suit. And I'm like, oh, this is cool, you know. Well, I hope he keeps it. What could go wrong? But it was so soap opera. It was really a lot of talky kind of on a desolate sort of world kind of thing, and not as cinematic.
Sure. Yeah.
This would be the 2015 sequel.
Oh, got it. I thought you were talking about the original.
No.
The original, what I remember is, to be honest, it almost reminds me of Lost. Like, you take all the heroes and villains, you throw them on an island, they all worry about what the other is up to. I mean, there's a lot to work with here. I feel like the Marvel engine could make a pretty great Secret Wars story.
I mean, look, it involves the folding into multiverses, and that not only means that you can do all the stuff here, but maybe you see the comeback of characters that are dead. You can see a lot of different things.
You could. Okay, I hear. So what Justin's getting at here is, once you bring in the multiverse in the bigger, much, much bigger multiverse, not just the one that's just mildly different to what we saw like in Avengers Endgame, is, yes, the multiverse where the Fantastic Four were a bunch of real dudes, where X-Men were there.
And also, all of the realities from the What If stories. If there's a particular What If story that just knocks it dead, like, oh my God, steampunk Wolverine is joining Secret Wars.
The one character I want them to bring in there is, I want Hugh Jackman's Wolverine. I want Logan.
Yeah.
I want Logan.
That'll be a great surprise.
And then coming unglued as old man Logan, you know, is dropped into the battle.
Or even some other Marvel story where all of a sudden we get like a Terminator sort of lightning storm, ball explodes, and you know, this tractor trailer truck's missing part of it. There's a naked, you know, hey, he's fit. Hugh Jackman gets up a la Terminator, and he just somehow got pulled in, you know, by the Beyond or somebody.
I want some excuse where it's like you got old man Logan, and from an alternate universe, Tony Stark sets him up with nanoparticles. He's wearing a suit of armor, and like they just, everybody goes all in on Wolverine to save the day at the end. They all loan them their best. He's got Captain America's shield. It'd be amazing.
Dude, I'll tell you, you could do an entire phase out of Secret Wars. Like, congratulations. All the Marvel movies from now for the next 3 years are going to be different 2-hour installments of Secret Wars.
A-okay.
Yeah.
I have a pick. It's a movie that came out a long time ago, and it holds up. My children hated it. They kept asking if they could leave, and I said, you do whatever you want. And they're like, no, but you'll judge me if I leave. And I was like, that's a thing. I think it's remarkable storytelling. I think it's a bummer that it isn't as well beloved as and remembered as I perceived it upon a second viewing. Go watch Castaway with Tom Hanks. It's great. It's great. Robert Zemeckis does a fantastic job of storytelling. Man, so much gets conveyed without words, and that's a hard thing to do. It's great.
Yeah. No, Castaway's fun, man. Hey, my pick's a podcast. It's called The Political Orphanage with Andrew Heaton. He is a friend who has relaunched a show. It's very much, I think, for those of us who like talking about political things but don't like having to understand that this is a red team, blue team fight, that Heaton, I think, is unleashed in this version of a podcast in talking long form about what he enjoys talking about the most, which is policy and unintended consequences and what you would do and what you wouldn't do. This last episode that he did about the wage gap and specifically using the news hook of the women's soccer team, I think is a great sober discussion of that topic, using a lot of really cool information and perspectives, and also it involves a 10-minute joke about giving horses LASIK eye surgery.
It looks like the easiest way to find it is through his Patreon. We'll have a link in the show notes.
Patreon.com/AndrewHeaton.
Yeah. Well, I don't.
The Lion King? You can recommend
I
it.
Was going to save The Lion King for my After Things pick, but I'm trying to think what else I've seen lately. Okay, this is dumb. I was in a Discord server and we were chatting about something, and one thing led to another, and I definitely spent a lot of the weekend binging old seasons of The Real Housewives of New York.
Hoo boy.
It is it's weird going back to it. In high school I was really into it for a few years and then kind of dropped off almost entirely when I was out in college and got graduated. And it's interesting. It was a very similar experience to going back and watching Iron Chef at the beginning, because you kind of saw like they were still not sure how they were shooting it, and they weren't sure like how much, you know, how much they wanted, the people on the show wanted like promote their own stuff and their own products and own brands. And then skipping forward to like the more recent days, and it's like it's a machine, right? Like it's all about people. It's about scenes and getting people in the room. And so I don't know, I'm watching it because I think I might have it as a subject on my podcast at some point, because the New York one especially has weird, like has a weird relationship to the idea of exploitation, especially because like, there's like, oh, you're an alcoholic and you know, you drink too much, but then in one of the trips they go to Mexico and you can visit a tequila plant and they drink the entire time. And so it's very weird just to watch the show about people who you kind of can't relate to. And that's why it's okay to watch them fight and kind of exploit themselves. But when you can relate to like issues of alcoholism or, you know, not having a largesse of money, it's a weird feeling. So I don't know. That's kind of been something I've been looking at. Hulu has like all of it, like all the new. They are new. They're back in DC now. That doesn't mean anything to you guys.
I was okay.
It's been an interesting thing. The Real Housewives.
So, I just got a weird thing in my RSS feed. And it's my pick from 2023.
Whoa.
What?
It's really weird. It's a Spider-Man movie. Now, this is the weird part because it sounds familiar. You know, Peter Parker adjusts and he encounters a mentor from another universe. Well, that was Far From Home or Spider-Man in the Spider-Verse. You know, that was actually the plot line of both of those. This is weird. Oh, a mysterious man named Logan. Huh. I wonder what this is.
So your pick is 2023's Spider-Man, in which he learns from Logan.
Spider-Man Logan, yeah. welcome to my fantasy pick. You know, come on, Spider-Man Wolverine movie. I've been listening to and really enjoying. I've been, and this is sort of an update, and that is the History of the Future by Blake J. Harris, who wrote Console Wars, which I've talked about before, which is the story of Oculus. And very, very good behind the scenes, Oculus getting its start, Palmer Luckey, John Carmack. I'm at the point now where Facebook acquires them. And it's a very interesting topic because it's, you know, just a really good behind the scenes sort of thing, because I think Oculus was one of the biggest acquisitions, you know, the non-social media sort of acquisitions in recent history. And, you know, kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, just fast, you know, they were less than 2 years old by the time Facebook came in and bought them for $3 billion, which fast. So there you go. It's my pick. History of the Future.
Right on.
It's been after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.